adesso parte il tiro, rete, 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 un gol straordinario.
Welcome to Rated This Way, a culture podcast that brings you the latest and greatest news from the world of Serie A and European soccer. My name is Michael D'Angelo, and with us, as always, we have Paolo Noboloni-Mangoni.
Welcome back, everyone.
We've got Mr. Chris Pacelli.
Hello, everybody.
We've got Gigi Julian D'Angelo.
How's everybody doing tonight?
We've got Lucio Battisti, Amarcio Paul, Bootleg Mix.
Bootleg Mix. Of course, Bootleg Mix.
And it's good because, you know, I was thinking, okay, it's a little slow, blah, blah, blah. We were talking about this. And then I said, you know what, though? It's kind of, it's like a vibe. It's almost like, you know, when they play music between the games on like Rye, and they're showing like all those
the highlights?
Yeah.
The halftime highlights?
That's exactly what this was. And I said, you know what? If it's okay for Rye, if Rye will do it, why can't Rated This Way do it?
No, that's what song was it?
Sometimes it was Michael Jackson.
it was Rock With You by Michael Jackson for like, I don't know, like
for 15 years.
Like 5 years. And then before that it was I should know this. It was
Rate With Maine. You.
No, I think it was Saint Germain.
Like the drink?
One. No.
I like Rate With You. That's what we should have told him to do. We should make a song. Get Violino on this.
Do you want to get sued?
Why? No, not sued. I just want him to make that and then tell Rye to use it. Rate With You. I got to Rate With You. Is that how he sings? I don't remember. Anyways, welcome to the show. We're almost at the culmination of this Serie A season, and boy, do we have
a finish.
We've been talking about this probably for, I want to say, a month now, that it's all gonna lead up to, you know, a very glorious finish, and we're actually seeing that because there's lots of happenings around the top of the table here that's really, yeah, making sure that all 38 games are necessary to determine the season's Scudetto winner. I like it.
It's actually astonishing, like, how no team has yet to kind of just take and run with it.
Yes, and I want to say that, I mean, let's just compare. So we're at 30, let's say Milan.
32
games. So 68 points after 32 games. Comparatively, English league, City are first, 31 games with 74 points. Liverpool are behind them by 1 point, though, so it's I guess a race there as well.
Just as close, yeah. But before, wasn't it like earlier on this season, wasn't there like a good like 7 point gap?
Yeah, I think there was. I think there was definitely some space there, but so obviously it's been closed. But again, like, let's look at France, for example. PSG. 31 matches played. They're at 71 points, which is 12 points above Marseille in second. Bundesliga, we got Bayern, 29 matches played, 69 points, and they're 9 points ahead of Dortmund. And Spain have Real Madrid are leading 72 points, 12 points ahead of Barcelona in second after 31 matches played. So, again, it just drives that point home about, obviously, there's, I mean, maybe just in general, it's closest to perhaps, I guess, Germany. But I mean, they've also played less games. Any case, what I'm getting at is it's just nuts that there are three teams that are still absolutely in this. 68 points for Milan, 66 points for Inter, and 66 points for Napoli. If Juventus hadn't lost a bunch of opening games, they'd also be there. So it says something. I'm not sure what, but it says something about the Italian soccer league here that there's been some, I don't know, there's some voodoo happening here.
Okay, so the Serie A enjoyers will say that it's a well-balanced league since Juventus lost their winning streak. And then the Serie A haters will say that the top teams are shit. So you guys decide. I think it's somewhere in between, in my opinion. I think it's mostly because of Juventus' shit start more than the league being balanced.
So do you think on, again, all else equal, let's say they played to their abilities, capabilities, is this a Juventus lead, or are you just saying that they're in the mix?
Well, so if they sold Ronaldo in July.
Yeah.
And sign Vlahovic in July, I think.
Okay, well, that's, yeah.
I think Juventus are within the thick of it.
Okay.
I think it's like a four-team race rather than three. Right. Even though Juventus are only 6 points out of it.
6 points, though, in 8 matches to make up is a lot.
Man, that's 6 points in 6 matches.
Yes, 6 points.
38 games, right?
Right.
Well, it's a swing of two games. I was talking with a friend of mine from Italy, and we're talking about. Well, actually, it was even better. It was Del Piero who was on Sky Sports in Italy. Brought up the fact that if Juventus beat Inter, there would be 3 points, and Juventus would have the tie break with Inter, I believe.
Right.
All I would say is this: is that like this late in the year, like you can't just speak in like what ifs, because I can probably pick 4 games and say like, well, if Milan won this, like the Scudetto race is over, and I'm sure Julian, you could say the same for Inter, and I know Napoli fans would probably pick half a dozen games, and they say, well, if Napoli won this game or drew this game. So it's easy to go down the list and say, what if, and if this and this and that. So the table is what it is. I'm sure every club wants do-overs for particular games. Like you said, Paulo, for Juve, it's the first, you know, 8 or 9 games of the season. Milan, you can look at the last, you know, 5 to 8 games. Inter, same thing. So I just think you can't speak in what ifs this late in the year.
Yeah, it's true. Remember when Milan lost to Spezia?
I was going to bring that one up as one where you could say, well, if it, this and if that, but I've erased that one 80% of that from my memory. 100% back.
you can't beat that guy. You
can't beat that guy. That's it, baby.
He's a manager of the month for a reason.
Yeah. Well, speaking about that, then there was a table I saw. Was it over the past, how many games, Michael, that Roma had was at like 22 points? Juventus had 21 points.
Yeah, I don't remember how many games. Was it like 19? I don't remember. No, it's too many.
It was 10 games, I think.
10 games, something like that. Yeah.
So, well, put it this way. If Roma didn't have a garbage start to the season as well, I mean, they could even be in the title race as well.
Yeah, well, that's it, because there are 57 points. So, for fifth place, obviously, but still 5 points behind Juve, which
they're tied with Lazio.
So they're actually 2 points ahead of Lazio.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
But for me, even though the top is tight, but I think the bottom half or the relegation race is something to watch out for. I think Spezia, I think, are clear. Empoli are clear, even though Empoli has like won in like 15 games or something like that. They had such a good start to the season that they essentially secured survival with six games. They picked up a very big point against Spezia, who have been playing well. Like I said, Spezia is probably safe. Sampdoria, after they lost to Bologna on Monday, I don't think they're safe yet. They probably need another 8 points in their last six games. Then you have Cagliari. I think they're the ones that are most at risk. Genoa took their second straight loss. They lost to Lazio big time. I think we'll get into the games, but I think they're the, as Chris said, I think they're the most likely to get out of the relegation zone if they have if results permitting, because I think Cagliari aren't the most consistent, and
five losses in a row.
Exactly, yeah, and we'll get into how they lost against Juventus.
Yeah, and it's going to be – that's it. That's a good segue. Let's get into that because, again, we have obviously a lot to get through, but I just want to say quickly that, again, six games is not a lot of time for those teams to make it, to make up those points, especially, you know, considering the struggles they've had so far, right? Like, you can't expect them to just magically come up with – 7 points and save their season. You know, like, it's going to be very tough for them. But again, we'll get to that when we maybe discuss the entirety of the table again. But as you said, let's start with the games here. So on Saturday, you already kind of mentioned it, but Empoli and Spezia finished to a 0-0 draw. And just again, recap again why that's important for each.
Well, I mean, Spezia have 34 points. 33 points, and Empoli have 34 points. Spezia is because I think they haven't lost in their last their last five games.
They've lost two of their last five.
So they have picked up 7 points in their last five games. So that's massive. That's a very good point total as you're moving towards that all important 40 points on the season, and they're 1 point closer to that. Same with Empoli, who, like I said, I don't think have won in their last 15 games. They only picked up draws. So they're 1 point closer to that 40 points. They lost twice. You said, Chris, in their last five games.
Sorry, Spezia.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've lost twice in their last five.
Yeah, well, 7 points.
Sassuolo and Juve.
Yeah, but those are top table teams.
Yeah.
So, and I've been shitting on Thiago Motta all season, and we made up this joke that he can't beat this guy anymore.
He's beating you.
There you go.
Okay, let's continue here, though. The next big game, I guess, would be Inter versus Verona. Julian, I assume you watched this game.
That I did. Inter, maybe it was a win, not Juve, but they looked kind of rejuvenated from this. Came out, got an early lead through Barella. Perisic, nice cross, Barella far post, bar down, and then they scored a second goal shortly after through a corner. DeMarco swings it in, Perisic flicks it on, Dzeko has an easy tap-in. And then Handanovic actually made a very good save shortly thereafter on Simeone to keep it 2-0. And honestly, that was kind of it. Inter seemed to cruise after that. One thing to note, though, was De Vrij went off at halftime. And they're not sure if he's going to play this week. But...
Gee.
Yeah. I watched this game, too. And I noted that the addition of DeMarco to the style, to the starting lineup, was an impressive one. It came out of nowhere. I thought he was a great presence on the field, and definitely worked well with Perisic. And then that save on Simeone right after the 2-0 goal was a game changer. I think obviously if Simeone scores that second half would have been a lot different, in the sense that in that second half, Verona turn on the pressure, and easily could have scored a goal if it wasn't for Handanovic again. I think in the second half he had another good 45 minutes, but completely changed the aspect of the game and gave Inter a good 2-0 lead going into the second half.
Yeah, like, and as Julian said, again, maybe they came off that Juventus game and felt a little rejuvenated.
Oh boy. But yeah, no, I just want to say Perisic, I think, was the man of the match for me. He had 2 assists, and he, I don't think, stopped running for 90 minutes. So
there's a video of,
yeah, he collapsed at the end of the game. I know they signed Gosens in January, but he's definitely got his work cut out for him, because the rumors are they're like one step away from extending Perisic's contract.
If that's the case, then DeMarco's probably gone.
I don't know. He's done well. I shouldn't say well. He's been okay as a left center back backup, but he needs obviously sure solid defenders beside him, because he's not the best defensively, but. Yeah.
He also needs playing time.
That I agree with.
Well, that's why I was a surprise that he was in the lineup.
Yeah.
But Sony came off the bench in the second half, around the 60th minute, I think it was. And then,
yeah, it just kind of helped close the game out.
Yeah, so I think Inter fans were complaining. Well, it was the opposite. The complaint about the opposite is that usually Inzaghi doesn't make any substitutions, and in that game against Verona he did all the substitutions early, and then kind of that's when Verona took momentum and almost scored a goal or pressed for their goal.
Right. Well, in any case, they still won 2-0. They move within a point at this point of Milan for first, and again they still have that that game in hand, mind you. So it was an important victory. Let's move on to Cagliari hosting Juventus. This game, Paolo, was very stressful.
I mean, the opening goal, it was a counterattack, right, from Cagliari. I can't remember who passed it. I think it was Marin that passed it into Yao Pedro, and Marin was taking on Chiellini. So the center of the field, of center of the box, was wide open, and Yao Pedro had plenty of time, well, for a professional player, to pick his corner, and it was only until Artur came and challenged him that he took that shot. So it was all stemmed from the fact that Chiellini was drawn out wide, which allowed space for Yao Pedro to finish that chance. I want to talk about
Rabiot.
Yes, exactly.
Hold on. Yeah, hold on. Let's first ask the listeners, do you have 5 hours?
Listen, I don't want to talk about his play anymore, because he doesn't deserve to start. Obviously, the transfer list, or the wish list for the next transfer window, is a midfielder.
Yeah, and if everything goes as planned, this is not a player that's going to be in the starting lineup next year. Maybe not even on the bench. I think the reality is, again, based on the talks that we've heard, it sounds like they want to almost, again, rejuvenate this midfield.
Well, listen, you would think so, but the way he's been playing, the way Allegri's
been playing him, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It seems like he's going to be one of the, like, another Matuidi, in the sense that he constantly plays, even though he doesn't deserve to play at all.
Yeah, I think what they need to do is take the toy out of Allegri's hand at that point, but that's anyways. Well, let's cross that bridge when we get to.
Yeah. So you took me off a tangent there. What I wanted to talk about was the Pellegrini shot that took a deflection off Rabiot and went to the net, which I thought, on face value, I thought it was a nice shot. But then when you look at the replay, and the ball hits Rabiot's arm, even though it was tucked in.
Yeah,
and his back. Yeah, and his back was turned. So the rule is that a handball goes into the net. Like if it's a handball, regardless where the arm is, if it hits the arm and it goes into the net, it's a handball.
That's new rule.
That's the new rule. Yeah, to give it clarity.
So any ball that enters the net after having struck what is a hand or an arm, et cetera, is no goal.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, well then then the rule was applied properly.
Yes, it was, yeah. Yeah. So I read that, I made sure about reading it, and that's the new rule that I think came into effect this season, right, Chris?
That's what I was just going to ask is when did it come into effect? Cause I don't remember vividly when it was actually announced, but I'm 99% sure they wouldn't make a rule change like that partway through the season. So
no,
it must have been this summer.
I think it was last summer now. But
yeah,
Announced right before this game. It was Milan who announced it.
It was Elliot Management.
Yes.
Yeah.
So again, based on that. I had no complaints, obviously, because I didn't want to give Rabiot a goal. But anyway, so other than that, and then De Ligt scored the header. I think it was a great cross from Cuadrado. He thought it looked like he was going to kind of drill it across, but it ended up being a nice loft to the cross. And it was a great finish from De Ligt going across the keeper to be Krango, who actually made a couple good saves. Throughout this game, and then in the second half, it was Vlahovic who scored the go-ahead goal. It was a nice ball into the box for the Serbian, who kind of looked like the defender touched it, and then it bounced off the defender, and then off Vlahovic into the net.
Yeah, it was odd because again, I guess you kind of nailed the sequence there, but. Dybala passes the ball through to him, and then it's just Vlahovic with the defender and the keeper, I guess, remaining on the side. And it almost looks like it deflects out as well, but it actually just deflects inside the post and is a goal.
So and it goes to show that for Juventus to win under Allegri, they have to play badly. In the sense,
play
that
badly or play negative.
Whatever, play negative, I guess, is the best way to describe
ugly.
It. Ugly. Ugly. There you go. Ugly. Ugly. To play ugly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was translated from Italian. Deve giocare male per vincere. But play ugly. Because they played so, quote-unquote, champagne football against Inter. lost. And they played ugly against Cagliari and came out with the 3 points. So again,
that's all Allegri needed to hear.
But the thing is that if you're not good with the ball, don't hold the ball.
Yeah,
just like what Inter did against. I keep going back to Mourinho against Barcelona. I thought that was the most genius.
Give it to them.
Application of tactics is give them the ball deep in their own area, allow them to waste time, which we'll get into that conversation a little bit later. In the episode, and then let them waste their own time. That's what I thought. Where I don't want to rehash the Inter game, but where they failed is that they're not comfortable on the ball. They have no ideas going forward.
You know what would fix that?
Pogba,
Milinkovic-Savic, and Pogba.
Yeah. Oh, it has to be one or the other. I don't think they
or both. Or both. One. Wait, no. Is one free? Is Pogba free?
I think he'll be free, yes.
Yeah.
But it's the salaries, though.
It's the kids, Marty. We're going to talk about your kids. Julian doesn't get that because he hasn't seen Back to the Future.
I've seen the Family Guy's poop.
That's what you're talking about. Let's not dive into that one right now.
Yeah. Let's get that one.
Okay, let's move on, Paulo. I appreciate the your candor here and talking about Juve and their struggles, but we've got to move on. Let's again just go through. I guess that was Saturday's games. Let's move on to Sunday. So we had Genoa hosting Lazio, and that game actually ends 4-1 for Lazio. So Marusic scores in 31st. Immobile gets a goal in the 45th and then 63rd before an own goal from Patrick makes it 3-1. But then Immobile completes a hat trick in the 76th minute, and that's how it ends. So with that, Immobile again extends his, I guess, capo lead here. So he's got 24 goals so far this season. Vlahovic has scored, obviously, in this weekend as well, is on 22. And Simeone is still stuck on 16 there. Any notes of this, or can we move on?
Cue the Immobile scoring for Lazio, not scored really, Joe.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Against Minos.
Yeah, exactly.
As much as I don't want to call Genoa Minos, they're effectively.
Just for second the, last, so.
Yeah, yeah, and for the starters. okay, finally, let's move into probably the biggest match of this weekend here. We had Napoli hosting Fiorentina for another massive game. Inter won, and to a much smaller extent, Juventus won. So it just, again, adds a little bit more pressure, I guess. But now Napoli, you would think, will need to win. What happened?
Well,
who wants to take it?
I mean, I could talk about the fact that last week I mentioned that Napoli had I wanted Napoli to win because I had them third in my list. But I said that these next two games for Napoli are the two toughest of what was then seven games remaining. Fiorentina have been playing well. They pushed. Help me out. Was it Inter?
Yeah, they tied Inter recently.
So they're no pushover, and they're able to press teams high, especially teams that like to play with possession. I'll talk about the first goal, the Fiorentina's first goal before halftime. Yes, I thought it was so Fiorentina kind of crossed the ball in. There was a shove on Koulibaly, and then kind of play continued for a few seconds. It was an attempted clear by Rahmani, but it was blocked by Gonzalez, who kind of like just volleyed it in after that. But I did not think that it should have counted. I thought it was a clear push on Koulibaly, and it should have been called back because Koulibaly was taken out of that play for the majority of that time that the ball was still moving around. So it definitely had an effect on the play, and I think Napoli was at a disadvantage in that sequence of play.
Right.
Comments? Anyone want to talk about it?
No, I feel like that's a pretty fair assessment. I think that's true.
I would have to see it, to be honest. I didn't see this.
It was the first goal.
And I usually disagree with Paulo, so I'll just disagree with what Paulo just said.
Yeah, no, I think,
to be consistent.
Exactly. No, but I mean, again, you're taking them out of the play almost, and it's not inconsequential because it literally leads to a goal, so.
So that was the Fiorentina first goal. I believe Mertens ties it up 1-1. And then it was
Ikone.
Yeah, that's right. Ikone scored with his first goal with a nice one-touch stop and then a half volley for his first goal, as I said. And then Cabral puts the game 3-1. For Fiorentina, it was a very nice finish. Oh my God, I think you can describe it better than I can.
Yeah, I mean, he kind of takes the ball just after half and is able to kind of get by the defender there. Who's the defender?
It was Lobotka, I think.
Lobotka, yeah, it kind of turns him and just like makes him, we said it before, but he makes him look silly kind of. And then he's able to get into the box, and it's like a very odd but very precise, like curling kind of shot to the far post, and it curls in. It's a beautiful goal.
So that, and then Napoli ends up, well, actually, there was a chance that Napoli missed. I can't remember. Oh, Mertens missed the header in front of the net. And then Osimhen makes it 3-2 by getting past the Fiorentina center back. I can't remember which one. But essentially kind of out-muscles him, controls it, and then volleys it to the top corner. But I want to go back. And that was the final score. But I want to go back to the first half. Before Fiorentina scored, Napoli had a gilt edge chance with Mario Rui. And the reason why, and there is a reason why he hasn't scored in 2 years. It was actually harder to miss than to get it on target.
So, you're telling me he pulled a Jaccarini?
Yeah, pretty much. And I think that kind of set the tone for that first half, which allowed to get into that game, because before that it was mostly Napoli controlling possession,
right? Yeah, and obviously again it ends 3-2 Fiorentina's favor, so it's a devastating loss for Napoli, who, you know, have title ambitions, and you know, rightfully did have title ambitions. They're not out of it by any means. They're just 2 points back of Milan now, so they're at 66 points, whereas Milan are 68 and Inter are also tied with them at 66. But
yeah, but
again, with that game in hand from Inter, let's assume that it's 69 points. Now they're 3 points back. That's a game. And you need to be able to make up that space, whereas you would have been in the lead at this point, right?
Yeah. And also, that's true, but it also puts so much pressure on Roma on Easter Monday.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They Napoli Roma, they have to come out with that result.
Yeah, I mean, if Napoli don't win against Roma, I think their Scudetto chances are effectively over, and barring another miracle.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. They're mostly over, I think, is what we can say with
because in this round, next round, we'll do the preview now, I guess, Michael, but. Milan play Genoa on the Friday, and then Inter play Spezia on the Friday as well. So let's say all things being relative, again, barring miracle, because any given game, anything can happen. Milan and Inter win those games, Napoli lose, and they're, like I said, it's effectively out of the Scudetto race.
Yeah, well, let's say again, Inter win that other game. Then instead of it being 3 points, it's now going to be 6 points. So they need to make sure they take that.
So that's why it's anything that happened in the last six games. That's why it's probably one of the closest. I think Twitter, there were a friend of the show, Nemo, was asking a question about, is this the closest Serie A season in recent memory? And I had to remind him of the 2001-2002 finish of what happened there.
That happened on that finish on the last day or whatever.
Yeah, I think it was May 5th, 2002. Which,
look it up.
Look it up. Yeah, so Inter blew. I'll explain it now. Inter blew a lead against Lazio, or Inter blew
save,
the game against
for
Lazio.
The people in the back.
Yeah, Inter blew the game against Lazio, and then I think Juventus beat Perugia, and that's where you had the famous quote. C'è poco da parlare,
siamo godendo.
Yeah, so let's move on to the next game, because I think we covered all the bases for Napoli Fiorentina.
Yeah, good. Okay, so let's. I'm very proud of you, Paulo, for making that point and wanting to move on. I'm actually very proud of you. let's go to so Sassuolo hosted Atalanta, and again, Atalanta are really. Struggling, I guess the best way to put it at this point, but this game didn't help them. They obviously have more to worry about in terms of obviously playing some European football, which we'll talk about after the break. But yeah, Sassuolo come out 2-1 victors here. Traore has a game, has a brace, 24 minutes, and then 61st minute scores another goal. And then Muriel in stoppages, I think it was what it was, 90 mm-hmm. minutes, makes it 2-1. But that's it. So now just to look at Atalanta's position at this point, now they've fallen to eighth spot. So it's, yeah, I had to search for their name because I couldn't believe how far down they fall.
Honestly, I think it was because of that Zapata injury.
Yeah.
They didn't properly replace him. They had an opportunity to replace him in January. They didn't want to bring in, at least a body. Like, they could have brought in Diego Costa for 6 months, but give Ms. Gasperini another alternative instead of putting on youth players or then putting on a midfielder as a center back. You know,
well, they brought in Boga, but
yeah, but Boga is a winger though.
Yeah,
kind of replaces Ilicic.
Yeah, yeah.
So I mean, there was no main focal point to the attack, and Muriel is better coming off the bench than he is as a start.
Yeah,
fair. We had a whole segment on Atalanta a month ago. I think it was.
Yeah. Anyways, all that to say, again, Atalanta fall to eighth position with 51 points. So they've Fiorentina have overtaken them now at this point. So it's looking like a really a season full of struggle for that, I'll say.
So, okay, let me want to clarify this now. So, seventh goes into Conference League?
Seventh goes into Conference League qualifiers.
Yeah.
Do they?
I think Conference League is automatically qualifiers, I think.
Is it a qualifier?
No, yeah, I think because 5 and 6 are Europa League. I don't know if they have a spot for qualifiers, do they?
No, I think 7th is Conference League.
7th is Conference League, which is Conference League qualifiers.
6th is Europa League qualifier.
Yeah, and then 5th is...
You're right, into the Europa League group stage.
Exactly, yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
So I just wanted to get this. So and I think Fiorentina are pushing for a European spot, and it is possible that they could finish in 7th. Yeah. I don't think they'll...
And that's what we've been saying all season too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think was it Cassano on that collect that show of I don't know, just low IQ people.
Bobo TV?
Yeah. mentioned that if they didn't sell Vlahovic, Fiorentina would be in 4th.
Oh, Cassano.
Yeah. Which I don't think that would have been final.
Anyways.
But yeah, it's just again, I don't want to give those four guys, especially a nanny,
any more of a platform.
Exactly.
Or a soapbox.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on here then. Let's talk about Venezia Udinese. So Venezia hosted Udinese and actually lost 2-1. De La Foz scores a PK 35 minutes in. Thierry scores in the 86th. Mm-hmm. But then.
Yeah, seven goals.
Yeah. And then Rodrigo Bacao scores in the 90th for the victory for Udinese. So good for them.
I think that Thierry has more Serie A goals than the other Thierry even
has. He probably has more goals this season too, right? Just in general.
Well, okay, wait, the one that plays for Milan or the one that played for Arsenal?
The one that played for Arsenal. Who's currently retired. That one. Okay, let's move on to Roma hosting Salernitana. And again, we've already spoken about Roma and their, they've been in decent form for sure, in Serie A at least. So this was a good game for them to kind of go out and try and take a win. And it actually doesn't start off well because Radovanovic scores 22 minutes in off of a free kick, Julian.
Yes, I forget who laid it off for him. Actually, it was Ribery. Ribery just touches it to him, and he unleashes a rocket that goes through the wall, and Rui Patricio had no chance, in my opinion.
Yeah, Verna, it. I don't know that it deflects. Paul and I were talking about it. Maybe it did, but I don't know if it did actually deflect. But it was a nice goal for sure. And then we actually have our goal of the match day, and that's Carlos Perez. he scores a tying goal 81 minutes in for Roma. I'll give you that audio right here.
This is Mkhitaryan. Thought about a shot. Carlos Perez on his left. Brilliant goal. Roma a level. Carlos Perez off the bench and scores a screamer. A left-footed curler to give Roma hope.
He says Carlos Perez, so maybe I should just say that. Anyways, he scores to make it 1-1. Big goal for Roma, obviously looking to tie it, and it's late at that point. And it actually, they get a goal from Smalling in the 85th minute to make it 2-1.
Yeah, so, it was a free kick, a crossbar free kick, and Smalling was at the back post and just kind of placed it in there.
There you go.
And somehow actually uncovered at the back post. I don't know how that.
Yeah.
Right.
Literally wide open.
That again, it's a 2-1 victory at that point because it's 85 minutes in. They secured the bag there, and then they ran smash and grab at the end.
Yeah, I thought the first time that Roma has recovered. The
Mourinho effect has taken
the Mourinho effect has taken place. I mean, they scored last minute against the Sassuolo to make it 2-2. That was the one that comes to mind because I remember watching that game as well. And I think there was a couple of tweets that said that, you know, Mourinho has instilled this never say die attitude at the club. And honestly, it showed right after the whistle. There was kind of an interaction between Davide Nicola and Mourinho. And Mourinho spoke about it at the end of the game, where he explained that it was caused by his bench saying that Salernitana are going to Serie B. And I think he said something along the lines that I'll tell the truth, unlike police or some governments or something like that. It was an outstanding, another Mourinho quote too. It was hilarious. And then I think Walter Sabatini, which is a former Roma sporting director, was being interviewed on in DAZN in Italy, and it seems like he's lost some of his lucidness, and when he was complaining, he was talking about how Mourinho will say that I haven't won any trophies, but I don't. I'll say it. I don't give a fuck. That's what he said, and was complaining that the Roma bench are aggressive, and always put pressure on the referee. But I mean, have you watched Mourinho in the last 15 years? That's how he does. That's his MO. Always complains to the ref. I mean, he did the exact same thing when he was at Inter.
Have you watched any manager?
Yeah,
ever?
Well, that too. I mean, but Mourinho has charisma to him. You know, he's more expressive, and it's the same thing in his press conferences. So it was just excuse for the fact that Salernitana blew their third game in a leading position after halftime. They've only led three times after half, and they've lost twice.
Yeah,
you know. But again, it was an entertaining game in terms of its episodes.
Yeah, and I think the worst part for me is that again, after leading for so long, they didn't reach my the over, which is what I was hoping for. So they're still stuck at 16 points. But correct me, you said this earlier, I think. You say that was it Udinese Salernitana that Udinese are going to have to forfeit?
No, so it was because Udinese put in an appeal to try to not get the game to be replayed. Because remember, originally it was Udinese were given the win.
Oh, okay.
And then Salernitana appealed it, and they won their appeal in the sense that they have to replay the game.
Okay. No, I thought it was the other way around of some sort, being Salernitana would be given the 3 points, and that's what I wanted. That's what I was trying to make.
No, the game has to be replayed. Yeah.
Okay. Well, again, let's hope that happens, and they win. Anyways, let's move on here. So the next game was another big game, Torino hosting Milan, and this is, again, massive for the time of the season, the position that Milan are in. And we already saw Torino give Inter fits a couple weeks ago. So Chris, just quickly, briefly, I know there wasn't much to talk through, but let's try and get through it. What happened in this game?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, there really wasn't much. I do want to say, and it's not just from this game, but I think Juric tactically is very underrated. Just the way he's able to prepare his teams and play in different ways, whether it is pressing or whether it is sitting back and playing on the counter. I think he is underrated from that perspective. But what happened in the game, I know on Twitter there's a lot of, oh, you know, Milan haven't conceded, or they've conceded this number of goals in the last five games. And for me, I don't give a crap. Like if you're tying games 0-0, or winning games 1-0 on, you know, a wonder strike from Bennacer or a pen, that's a problem. So, I mean, while it's nice to not concede, there's a bigger problem, which is that Milan is not converting their chances. And in this Torino game specifically, they didn't really have too many clear-cut chances. The plan was really, you know, try and play off Giroud or hope Leao could make something happen. And none of that really worked out. So, deserved draw. You could maybe even argue Torino did a bit more to win, but Lotti had a couple of chances. Pioli has to fix something. I've kind of been saying this for a while, that I don't think he's a manager to take them to that next level. And it's games like this where he kind of proves my point a little bit, where tactically he just gets a little stale. And obviously the players have to take some of the blame, but I think tactically he's run out of ideas, or that's what it is. That's what it looks like.
Cue Andrea Pirlo next season.
Anybody at this point. Bring Reno back.
Yeah. Okay, Paulo.
We'll give you Jim Powell.
I know you have thoughts.
Well, I'm surprised. I think Chris did this tactically and didn't mention the episode where I think it was Single making a challenge or winning the ball from Theo Hernandez in the box.
Oh, God.
There was a lot of...
And he fell?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There was a lot of chatter on Twitter and the MT as well, saying that it should have been a penalty. I remember one Milan fan was telling me that the picture frame, so each frame that showed the challenge, showed Single coming in from behind, which makes it not a clean challenge because it came in from behind. And it wasn't...
Who was it? Was that Rosario?
No. It was someone else. and doesn't make it a fair challenge because the angle was from behind. But if you look at it from the back view, from where the ref was, where I'm assuming the ref was, which was in behind the play, you look at it, and Theo Hernandez had his arm kind of out. And when the contact was made, fell over. So yeah. He was, in my opinion, looking for...
For sure he was.
And he has a reputation.
Yeah.
I believe that reputation came into play, which didn't give him the call that he was looking for.
You're starting to sound like Rosario. Anyways, I think Chris made a point of not bringing that up. probably because again it didn't need to be talked about. So just it was you know, tried to get a penalty, didn't work. That was it.
Look, like I said, I leave the
conspiracy theories?
Conspiracy theories to Paulo. It's a weekly thing. If they win, they were lucky. If they lost, they were lucky to have not lost by more. So that's the Paulo mantra.
It's true. Okay, so again with that draw, Milan are at 68 points. So again, they're still in first, but at this point they don't have it's not necessarily all in their hands, because if Inter make up their game and win, then they're in the lead. So really it was a costly draw. We'll see how costly it is. Because again, there's obviously these games to be played. There's still six matches to kind of go through, where there's going to be, I'm sure, lots more of fumbling, bungling, whatever you want to call it. It's going to be the Scudetto del Bungle. Bungalancio? Bungalancio.
I know, there was
what?
There's another one. There's a bunch of Scudettos. So Scudetto del Bilancio. I think it was there's a few of them. I actually made a list, but anyway,
we'll get to Bunga Bunga.
Bunga Bunga. One second, let me find something that's a laugh. But then
while you look that up.
Yeah, keep talking.
Yeah, so just to finish out the matches. So you already mentioned it way earlier, but Monday we had Bologna hosting Sampdoria, and Samp lose this. So Arnautovic gets a brace, 61st minute and 76th minute, I believe it was. Are the two goals for Bologna. So that's it. That's all.
Yeah. Wasn't Milan Campione d'Inverno too?
Yeah, they were.
Yeah. So Scudetto di Bilancio Campione d'Inverno. That's what
I thought it was Inter, but anyways.
This season Inter.
It was Inter?
Last season.
It was Milan. Yeah.
Get your shit together.
Get your ears right.
It was all a blur.
Okay, we've already talked too much about this, Paulo. What could you possibly say that hasn't already been said?
I was going to say that we mentioned Napoli Roma.
Yeah.
On the Monday at 1 p.m. our time, Eastern time.
Yeah.
That's another good game. That's pretty much it. And then the two Milan teams play on Friday.
Okay, great. So, again, it's going to be a massive weekend coming up for Serie A soccer. Make sure you're tuned in. What we're going to do right this second is we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and recap some European culture that happened this week. Let's do that. Let's take a quick break and we'll be right back. And we're back. Okay. So what we should get to is obviously Europa League. So we'll cover that. Europa Conference League. We'll cover that as well. And then we have a little bit of discussion. Obviously, there's some talks going on. I think it's in the World Cup, though. They're talking about using this new effective time idea, I guess, and implementing it, which is what, I guess, Pioli's been talking about. So we'll talk through that. We'll have a whole conversation about that. Then we'll finish off the show with a Serie B minute, which has been missed. Paulo's been slacking. Last couple episodes.
Well, it's been cut. It was content.
That's it. Yeah, it was a decision, executive decision to streamline the end results of our episodes. Correct.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. That's called that. It was a programming decision.
That's what it was. Programming decision.
There we go.
That's what I was looking for.
So okay, let's start again. Just briefly, let's talk about Europa League. So we had on Thursday, and actually, they played an early game at Atalanta.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was 12:45 Eastern Standard Time. Atalanta traveled to Leipzig, and this was a very entertaining game. So Atalanta took the lead with a nice goal from Luis Muriel. And then I think it was later on in the second half, I believe it was. Michael, can you confirm that?
Yeah.
It was in the second half where there was a PK. I think Demiral fouled player in the box. I think it was the right call in the end. It was stopped by Musso. They were still kind of celebrating. I think it went out for a corner. Corner was played quickly and short, and then it was crossed in, and then it was put in by the Leipzig center back. But then before that, it was because Zappacosta failed to clear the ball properly. So it ended up being 1-1, but the game was exciting in the sense that Atalanta hit multiple posts. That young center back that I referenced earlier, I think it was Scavini, put his chance over the bar. Leipzig had posts for themselves, had a chance cleared off the line. Like, it was a wild second half. And
it was eventful.
It was eventful, exactly. It was very eventful and somehow was still 1-1. I mean, this game easily could have been, you know, three goals each for each team. You know, it was a really entertaining game to watch.
I'd be curious what the XG was on the game, Paul.
honestly, they're probably more than one, that's for sure.
You look it up.
Up, you guys keep talking and see if they can come out with the win and on Thursday.
Yeah, and actually, I was gonna bring up obviously. So that's this Thursday they're gonna play the return. But we've already talked about it a little bit, I think, in previous episodes. But I guess Atalanta's chance of making Champions League really relies on this tournament at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think we touched on it in the first half, right? But they've slipped all the way into eighth.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would say top four is definitely out of the question for them this year. So, yeah, winning Europa League is their ticket to Champions League for this year. Just quickly, sorry, what was the final from the first leg?
1-1.
Sorry?
1-1.
Yeah. Okay, 1-1. I got it. Okay. Yeah, I mean, I still, when we did this 2 weeks ago, I picked them to go through. I would still pick them to go through. I know, despite their struggles, they're still one of the more expansive teams when they're attacking, one of the more dangerous teams. So I'll still pick Atalanta going through, and that's not there's no Serie A bias in there. I just genuinely think that there's more talent there and enough to get them through to the next round.
Yeah,
and the good news for them, I was just going to say that Duvan was back in their loss to Sassuolo, so maybe.
Oh, did he come on as a sub?
I think he started, actually.
Okay, good.
So yeah. I think he started in the game against Sassuolo and then came on as a sub against Leipzig.
Yeah, so if he can get into match fitness, I mean, I think that bodes well for them for sure.
Okay, so Michael, I found the XG for you.
Yeah.
Leipzig had 2.88 and Atalanta had 1.99.
Mm.
So yeah, as I said.
3-2 possible.
Yeah, as I said, both teams could have easily had more than one goal.
So are they lucky then to have tied this game?
I don't know. In a way, yes.
Were they in Germany?
What?
Were they the Germany. Home team?
No, it was in Germany.
Okay.
But in a way, yes, because they're away. But again, away goals don't count anymore. But at least this time they're going back home and they have a home crowd. Even though they're kind of struggling, but Europe is a whole other competition than Serie A. Even Gasper, you guys were talking about it that you know the only way to make it in Europe is to win the Europa League, and even Gasperini said it that this quarterfinal tie against Leipzig is the crossroads of their season. If they come out of it, at least they have something to fight for. If they get knocked out at this stage, well, then their season is pretty much over.
Well, and that's again, it's devastating because beyond just the season being over, it really impacts next season because they're not even close. I guess at this point, they're still like I think they're like 5 points out of. I can't remember now, but they're significantly out of that seventh spot for a Conference League spot, you know? So it's it's not going to be good if they don't win. And that's the reality, is they have to go out and they have to do this, because if we want to see Atalanta playing European soccer, which I think we all enjoy, because again, they've been able to really go out and perform on that stage, it really hinges on this, because we're not going to be able to see that next year if all of these results continue the way they've been going.
So Atalanta have 51 points, Fiorentina have 53 points, and then okay. Lazio sixth with 55. So they're 4 points out of Europa League qualifying.
Right. So it's going to be a massive last six games for them as well. And I mean, again, this is just, there's so many storylines that are happening in Serie A this season, and it's partly because we might be a farmers league. It's partly because, you know, there's just all those storylines are just manifesting themselves. It's a really interesting season.
Yeah, and honestly, if I'm Fiorentina or Lazio, I want Atalanta to win so they continue to play more games, which allows them to play more midweek games. Right. So then they have an advantage when it comes to the weekend.
Yeah. Okay, so let's move on to Conference League. So we had Bodo Glimt hosting Roma?
Yes, hosting.
On a plastic field.
On a plastic field, yes.
Yeah, so explain that.
It's too cold in Norway, so they play on artificial turf. From
there was still snow there. Because it's pretty much like close, very, very close to the Arctic Circle.
Got it.
Well, pretty much like below the Arctic Circle. It's one of like the highest, the most northern like club or something like that. Yeah, it was still kind of cold, or it's cold enough to still have snow on the ground, put it that way.
Right.
How to describe it? Roma did well in the first half. Pellegrini scored a very nice goal to make it 1-0. And then I think in the second half, Bodo's pressing came into play. They managed to get two deflected goals in the second half. The first goal, honestly, I think it was more Rui Patricio's fault, or as we like to call it every time he makes a mistake, Rui Patricio. I think it was his fault, because he overplayed the first goal. He overplayed the shot, and he was out of position when the ball took a deflection. The second goal, I think, was just very unlucky. It was a header that was probably going slightly wide. The ball hit off Vigna and then went inside the post. Ended up being 2-1, but honestly, Roma realized that they needed more than one goal and shouldn't have continued to press in that game. But I think also change when Gianluca Mancini came off the field. I think Mourinho complained after that, you're more likely to get injured playing on what he called a plastic field, plastic pitch. Mm. Luckily for Roma, it wasn't really anything serious. It was probably, you know, a tweak or something like that. But and then just to kind of wrap it all up here, there was punches thrown. Yeah. There was like a scuffle between Bodo's head coach and Roma's goalkeeping coach, and they're both suspended for this game as well.
What happened? Like, what was the impetus?
Punches were thrown. There was or threats were made, and then it came to a scuffle.
Okay.
Supposedly Pellegrini said that threats were made against the goalkeeping coach, Roma's goalkeeping coach.
Okay.
And I guess something happened, and there was a fight that broke out.
Interesting.
Is it Morgan De Sanctis?
No, he left the club.
He should be Roma's goalkeeper coach.
But, wasn't he involved until like literally
this year, this past season. Yeah, this past season.
Yeah, yeah.
This past season, it was a few months ago. I want to say
February. We talked about it. Yeah. That's right.
But yeah.
Sorry. Go ahead.
It sets up an exciting leg. Honestly, Roman fans are pissed. The way that the Bodo fans welcomed the club. Again, Mourinho was there was snowball thrown at Mourinho. I think there's video of of snowballs being thrown at Abraham coming off the field. So yeah, then what happened at the end of the game between the staff. So speaking about Violino, Michael. So you know how he made another parody song, and okay. He referenced this game, this Bodo versus Roma, and it was actually picked up by a Norwegian TV station.
Did he sue them?
He threatened to sue. Yeah, again, there's more threats of being sued. So again, it just everything is happening. Roma refused to find them a field to practice on when they arrived in Rome. They offered him an artificial turf field, probably as retribution, and they were forced to go play at Formello, which is Lazio's training ground. So,
Bobo were this week, you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Bodo.
Bobo.
But yeah, it is going to be an explosive game. There's a lot of tension surrounding it. And honestly, I didn't mention earlier, but there was 64,000 fans at Roma Salernitana. I would expect roughly the same number for this game, because I think it's going to be an outstanding game to watch.
Right.
I feel like by default, if you're traveling and you need a place to play, you just contact your opponent's main rival.
Yeah.
And they'll gladly put you up, right? Because they all want to see their rival team lose. So that would be my first goal too, anyways.
Yeah. Smart. You're playing 4D chess there. Okay, so yeah, just last point on that, I guess, is it's an important note though. Roma outscored 8-1 at Bodo, right?
Yeah,
that's
on the plastic pitch.
Yeah, and so the last game or their return, like they won what 3-1 or something like that in the last in the group stages.
They beat them, yes.
Yeah, was it 2-1 or 3-1 or something like that?
I feel like it's 2-1. I can't remember. I want to say it's 2-1. But either way, they still have to beat them by two goals. Well, by two goals if they want to qualify without...
Yeah, going to penalties or whatever. They need one goal to continue it, obviously, right? So
yeah.
But beyond that...
I honestly, if I was a Bodo fan, I would not travel for that game.
Why?
I would say this. I've lived in Rome. I've seen both Lazio and Roma games, and they could easily pick you out. Like if you are alone or traveling in groups of two or three, do not travel. Don't even show your face. Don't even wear any markings. Just go to the game and make sure you stay in large groups. This is, I know we have some listeners from the Nordic countries, and honestly, stay away from the main quarter at Trastevere, because that's a lot of Roma fans are from that area, and they're pissed off. Like Roma fans are pissed off from the way that their club was treated last week.
Yeah, it does sound really alarmist, but I'll let it slide. I'll allow it. Just in the event that something does happen. I mean, you were talking about hooligans, so anything could happen here.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, that's it for Conference League and Europa League. Thank you for that discussion there. Let's move on to what is being discussed in terms of changes, possible changes to the game. So this is in relation to a report out there that for the World Cup, there's the possibility that they were going to test the time. Was it again, Paulo?
So it's to
effective time.
Yeah, measure the effective time. So it's a statistic to essentially measure or to account for the time that the ball is in play. So the ball is being essentially moved. Chris could help me out. An idea proposed by Stefano Pioli. He's been advocating for it. Just before I hand it off to Chris again, I neglected to mention that Pioli was complaining about Inter and Milan not being played at the same time. The games playing at the same time, which I find hilarious because no one else has complained about it ever until the last few games of the season. So I love how this guy keeps finding excuses, and then at the end of the game, he said that he'll never talk about the refs ever again. I'll give that 2 weeks before he starts complaining about the refs again. So anyway, Chris, go ahead. I just want to catch up on what I missed.
So I mean, effective time, like you mentioned, it's just kind of looking at when is the ball actually in play. So when the ball goes out for a throw in, or the play stop for a free kick, or a player's rolling around on the ground, you know, all that stuff considers the ball not in play. So trying to increase the amount of time where the ball is in play. Now, one option, and they definitely won't go this route, but it's one that I can appreciate. So for college soccer in the United States, when the ball is not in play, the clock stops. So it's obviously it's you know, 2:45s as we're used to, but when the ball goes out for a throw-in, or when there's a goal or an injury, the clock stops. So there is very little time wasting, because you know that when you're lying down on the ground, you know, supposedly faking an injury, you're not wasting any time, right? Or when you take your time going to take a throw-in, you're not actually wasting time because the clock has stopped, right? So I haven't watched any college soccer games recently, but I think with that rule in place, you're not going to eliminate players trying to slow the game down, but you kind of push them away from it. So I'd be curious to see if FIFA could at least do a study on that to see what kind of changes that might bring with regards to effective game time. The whole 100 minutes thing, I don't know. I get what they're trying to go after, but at the end of the day, it's, in my opinion, it's not going to stop players from, you know, in the last 10 minutes going down every time, drawing an injury out, and all this stuff that we see nowadays that slows the game down. So I don't know if this 100-minute thing is the solution to the problem.
What's the 100-minute thing? Just to...
If I read it correctly, maybe Paul jump in. It was just that I think they'd be looking at, it's just a set amount of extra time at the end of the game. So, you know, sometimes it fluctuates between three and five.
Right.
I think it was to make it so that the game ends up being 100 minutes. Yeah, whether it's 5 and 5, or if they only call, you know, three in the first half, maybe you make the second one 7 minutes regardless. I might be completely wrong on that. But
is that in addition to, again, implementing an effective time, like implementing stoppages in the countdown?
That I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they're also testing. I read an article that I think it was in the Portuguese league or something like that. They're testing 70 minutes as well.
Right.
To kind of reduce it to see if there's more play instead of less time wasting. But I don't think FIFA themselves are going to go that route. I think it was just another, like Chris said, it was college. I think it was just more extenuous. Outsiders testing different strategies. Right. But thinking about the 100 minutes, I think it's a good idea by adding 5 minutes at the end of the first half, because usually there's only 1 or 2 minutes of stoppages at the end of the first half, and maybe at most on average 5 in the in the second half. I think by adding 5 and 5, as Chris said, 3 and 7, I think will definitely give fans more of their money worth, their money's worth.
Yeah, I mean, the only time that it's longer is if Inter have to retake a penalty and it ends up being 10 minutes.
Yeah, well, that's another discussion that I don't feel like getting into.
Julian, what do you think?
I do, honestly, the like 100-minute thing sounds fine, but again, it's not going to like dissuade players from wasting time. They're just going to do it more.
Yeah, especially if it's that's why my question was again if it's a separate talk or whatever, because if it's just you're gonna have 5 minutes of extra time and that's it, again, it's just that's it, you waste that and it's done. So if it's in addition to having this effective time thing happen, then that makes more sense, because again, you eliminate all that wasting of those minutes, because they're just gonna look stupid. Because it's just gonna be like, okay, well, we still have to play. We still have to play all this time that you've been wasting right now. So,
honestly, and Michael, you're probably right as well, because so far, I think what's it called, the CIES Football Observatory crunched the preliminary numbers of effective time, and it showed that Serie A actually has
I think it was 62% of the 90 minutes.
Yeah, so 31.35 minutes per game, which is the highest of the top five leagues. After that is the Bundesliga, and then the English Premier League, and then Ligue 1, and then Spain, and then at the main European, like the main European leagues, the Scottish Premiership was the worst with 55 minutes.
Wait, sorry, it's 55 minutes of wasted time?
No, of time being played, so of effective time.
Oh, okay, sorry. So
so out of the 90 minutes, 55 were essentially being played.
Right.
55 minutes with the ball being active.
Yeah.
So, but again, that's not like... with the ball being active. Okay. So again, what if someone's holding the ball in the corner and just not moving?
Yeah, that's considered active. The ball, the ball's in play. Yeah.
Okay, good. Okay.
Yep.
So sorry, Serie A leads that?
Yeah.
Yes.
Which is interesting, because, you know, the myth surrounding Serie A is that it's boring, there's no action, it's not fast enough. Well, when you look at Premier League, which is third, the top five leagues are still kind of close around. There's only maybe difference of 3 minutes at most. The English Premier League is technically less is being played because of the fact that they're so-called physical and fast-paced.
But the thing, I was gonna say, like, that actually probably it can make sense, because again, it's more of a smashing kind of, like, the ball is probably gonna be out often, because again, these plays are these players are being fouled. They're like, you know, it's a rougher almost league, whereas in Serie A it's very tactical. So it makes sense that they are playing more with it, because it's almost more buildup, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that data actually makes sense. I'd be curious, how far were they from like Spanish league?
I think La Liga was 58.36.
Compared to what? 65?
No, 61.35. Oh, 61.
Okay. Okay. Not that far.
So about what? 3 minutes.
Yeah, but I mean, even Serie A versus Scotland was 55 minutes, I think, right? So I guess that is significant in some regard.
So my only thing is, though, like, we've all played soccer. We've all played 90-minute games. If, let's just say, they do a stop clock, or whenever the ball's out, they stop it, players are going to be fucking exhausted. Like, to actually be running for 90 minutes is different than playing 90 minutes, right? Like, these guys are already running 11, 12 to 14 kilometers a game.
I think the idea was that it was less time, though, wasn't it?
Not in college. Like, they're playing 45s, as far as I know. But they also have more than three, or I guess, yeah, more than three substitutions. Like, I'm sure every state and every tier is different, but for some, you know, for example, maybe you have eight subs all game. For some, it's, you know, unlimited in the first half, and then in the second half, if you come out, you can't go back in.
Right.
So those kinds of rules. So, yeah, Julian, you're not wrong. It definitely would be more running, but if they're playing with different substitution rules, then I would say the majority of the players aren't playing 90 minutes.
Yeah, no, it's a great point, though. Mm-hmm. I think, again, because it really changes, again, I guess, just tactically, what are you doing? If you have a player who, you know, relies on having that ability to take minutes off almost, you know, like it, to catch their breath, et cetera, they go in big spurts, like attacking players, right? It's important to be able to have that time. So what are they just going to be doing? Not contributing to the play? They're just going to wait until they, like, regain their, you know, their, like, breath, and then they can contribute, you know?
Or do you stop the clock if a player goes down for an injury? And that's, I don't know. Yeah. Instead of, you know, every time the ball goes out of bounds. Because I think, like, throw-ins for the most part, I mean, you can waste a little bit of time, but in general, once the ball is in your hands, the ref is going to tell you to take the throw. Whereas if we've all seen a player stay on the ground for 3 minutes and then get back up and a minute later do it all again. So, tricky. It's tricky.
That's a good point. Again, you probably have to find that balance, whatever works.
I think this is a red herring. I think there are more important problems to fix within the game, like getting a better handle on VAR, number one, to kind of clarify rules and have a more standardized handball rule as well. Because I think in I want to say it could be Siri. I have to double check. I don't know if it's the IRAB, which is the British standardizing rulemaker for soccer, and FIFA kind of collaborates with them. But I think for me, it's the bigger problem is VAR is getting more VAR, more like, in my opinion, like North American replay. And dealing with that way, and not in sense of having challenges, but in the sense of having
a situation room.
Say again?
A situation room.
Exactly, yeah. Having a better situation room and actually having the ref saying, okay, you're telling me this. I'm not positive. I'm going to go regardless of you tell me if I should go or not. I think of giving more power to the ref to actually go and double and verify and confirm his decision. I think that's more important than evaluating effective time. Like Chris said, depends on who and what team wastes more time. You know, it's not standardized all across the board. I think VAR is something where you can get more standardization than effective time, because each team has a theory of wasting more time, or in Atalanta's case, they want to attack more and play with the ball more. I mean, there's too many variables for effective time, in my opinion.
Right. Okay, well, I think that's, again, a good discussion. Any last points you guys want to get in before we move on to Paulo's City of B Minute?
Just on that, one of the same reports, there was a mention of automatic offsides were essentially, you know, similar to goal line, where the watch goes off if it crosses the line. If the play is offside, the referee's watch will go off. So, you know, we've seen it so many times where we know the player's offside, but the play continues and continues. So if, essentially, if the referee's watch goes off, he or she, you know, blows it down right away, whistle, get on with the play. So I don't think that saves a lot of time, but you might save, you know, 2 minutes here and there over the course of a game with the automatic offsides. And then I think more importantly, you save potential injuries, right? So many times we know it's offside, but the players have to play to the whistle and, you know, risk, you know, high intensity collisions. So that was something else that was mentioned, but I don't see that happening anytime soon.
Yeah, interesting. Okay. Yeah, gentlemen, Paulo, Julian,
I think it'd be interesting for those who like to look at those types of stats. Nothing more. When fans go to the game, they want to watch the game as well, but they also go for the atmosphere. I think that's the number one draw. People say they want to pay, they don't want to shorten the game, then stop tinkering with the game. Just focus on the deficiencies. Effective playing time, in my opinion, is not one of the deficiencies. The deficiencies is to improve the quality of the game.
Yeah.
They argue that effective time is part of the quality. I disagree.
Yeah. And again, it's not like it's, you know, we're talking about the possibility of, again, stopping time wasting, but it's not really, it's there's no guarantee that happens, right? Because again, you're still tactically wanting to draw fouls, so that's still going to happen. So depending on how all that stuff is implemented, it could, you know, really not impact it at all. Okay, Julian, quickly, nothing?
Yeah, no, I was going to say, I do agree. I don't know if I like the idea. Maybe I'm too much of a purist to want to change up the rules that drastically. If they want to do something to get players to stop diving and wasting time, start handing out more yellows.
Yeah. Especially when they have confirmed it with VAR. You know, like if it's like, that's a dive.
Yeah.
In the box, he's trying to get me to give him a penalty. That's a yellow.
Or even like if it has to be a post-match yellow where you do a full review after the game. And,
yeah, exactly.
And, you know, maybe even a fine in some cases. I mean, I'm sure if you start hurting a player's wallet for flopping or time-wasting, you know, excessive time-wasting, they're going to stop doing it, you would hope.
Unless if your name is Cuadrado, then you can do whatever you want. okay,
hey, listen, Perisic put him in a chokehold once and didn't even get a card. So
that's right. Oh, God. Paulo, consider me back.
Yeah. Okay, so over the past few weeks, we haven't done it, but there were some crucial games in round 34 in Serie B. For example, Brescia beat Parma 1-0, which is very important because Brescia's in the top eight. Pisa tied Perugia 1-1. Pisa is another top eight team. Monza beat Cosenza 2-0. Monza is within the top three. And then Benevento beat Vicenza 1-0. They're another top eight team. Frosinone beat Cremonese 2-1. Frosinone could push away their eighth and could extend the lead on Perugia, who are in ninth. And Lecce beat Spal 1-0. So with that 1-0 win, Lecce have 65 points and are in first place. Monza are in second with 63 points. Cremonese are in third with 63 points. Brescia with 61 points. Benevento 60. Pisa 60. Ascoli 55. And like I said, Frosinone in eighth with 54 points. So some important games next round, which there are only four more games left. Monza play Brescia on Easter Monday. That could easily decide the second place in Serie B, which is an automatic promotion to Serie A.
Yeah, I was going to say, why don't you just, again, briefly discuss it. So it's 1 and 2 are automatic.
1 and 2 are automatic. 3 to 8 play in a playoff system.
For the last spot.
For the last spot, yes, exactly. there's some intricacies to the rules, which we'll get into later on at the end of the season. Okay. I don't want to waste time. I tried to explain Syria, the Lega Pro, which took almost an entire segment.
Yeah, it'll take the time for sure.
Yeah, so that's Serie B. Julian wanted me to get to Lega Pro. So Bari qualified as first place in Lega Pro Group C, I think it is. And then you wanted me to talk about Sud Tirol, who have only conceded 9 goals all season, but yet they're only 2 points up on Padova for first. Modena are 4 points up on Reggiana, and they're only 2 rounds left in Lega Pro, so they could qualify as Group B champions. Pescara are also in Group B. Their goal now is to finish in third place, so I think, which goes to like the semifinals of the whole Lega Pro qualifying system. Anyway, they actually fired their manager a few weeks ago, Gaetano Alteri, which probably should have been fired a long time ago, but that ended up being the case. And it was actually replaced by former Lazio player Luciano Zarri. And like I said, Bari qualified, or were essentially champions with like 6 games left.
Excellent. Okay, well, that's it for a 2-minute edition of, actually 3-minute edition of Serie B Minute. But okay, bravo. Yeah, exactly. Bravo, Paul. Anything else that we should talk about? If not, I think that's the show, guys.
Just we'll touch on it next week. But Coppa Italia is also next week.
Yes, right. Okay, Julian.
14 Inter.
Okay. Chris?
Forza Christine Sinclair.
Right, is she retiring? Is that the last game or something?
No, it was Stephanie Labbe's last game, or it's coming up. I haven't double-checked on that, but just Forza Christine Sinclair.
That's it.
She's the GOAT.
That's it. What do you want, Paul?
Well, yeah. Self-explanatory.
I thought she was retiring. I think because I saw something...
I mean, she's probably doesn't have too much time left, but playing soccer, not. I don't want to get my words twisted. But no, Steph Labbe is. I think she's already confirmed. She's retiring. I think this is kind of her farewell tour right now.
Okay, that's what the tour is, because they're making a big thing on Twitter. So
yep.
Okay, now I know who it is.
All right, then if that's everything, I just want to remind everybody to follow us on our socials. So at RTW Calcio on both Twitter and Instagram. We've had a couple of giveaways recently, so again, keep your eyes.
The new name, Michael.
Yeah. So, Paula, what is it?
Rate this giveaway. Yeah,
right to this giveaway. Anyways, it makes more sense to see it. It's just more of like a pleasing to the eye thing. And yeah, it's irrelevant for most people. But yeah, just keep your eyes on our social channels where we we continue to kind of, you know, we love to spread the joy of Calcio and make people happy with our giveaways. So we'll for sure have some more of those coming up. I guess beyond that, that's really it. Let's enjoy a nice week of European soccer on Thursday. We have Serie A back on Friday, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Right.
Yeah, and then we've got Saturday. And Saturday, yeah.
And then no Calcio on Sunday.
No Calcio on Sunday, and then Monday.
Yeah.
There you go. Okay. That's the show then. Thanks for listening, and we will see you all next week. All right. Bye.